But with the Apache server, you know, you really had to have a group of people who agreed. So they developed mechanisms for voting, for instance. They developed mechanisms whereby, you know, multiple people had access to the same source tree. You know, I mean, some of you may have heard Linus doesn't like source code control. I mean, Linus is this, you know, brilliant guy who keeps it all in his head, you know. You know, here when you have 20 people working on the same code, they need those tools. So Apache, in some sense, has a better developed culture of collaboration and tools for collaboration than many of the other well-known open source projects. So that was kind of interesting, and that was actually behind a company that at O'Reilly we were involved in. That's a company called Collab.net. And what we're really trying to productize with Collab.net is not the Apache server, but the Apache process. In other words, how do you take that collaborative process and turn it into a system that other people can use? And this has real relevance to this idea of open source being about collaboration rather than being about particular licenses. For example, a project that we're talking about in my company with Collab.net, you know, it's kind of license agnostic. We may end up with it under an open source license, but we may not. It has to do with our order entry system. You know, we're a book publisher, and there's probably, a few hundred other publishers of our size in the country. We have a specialized set of problems. We have pretty specialized software. I mean, it's software, for example, that says, oh, yeah, we have to have, you know, EDI relationships with, you know, these vendors, and we need to have, you know, and in some cases it's a well-known vendor like Amazon, but it might also be our warehouse, who, for example, only 20 other publishers in the entire world to use. You know, so I go, that's not software that's ever going to take over the world. The original software is actually PIC-based. Some of you may remember PIC was a database operating system kind of contemporaneous with Unix. It's actually PIC on Unix. But the company that provided it went out of business. It was exactly like the Apache situation. So we said, hey, let's see if we can get everybody together. And we're actually working, you know, with Collab.net to try to come up with ideas. You know, can we actually take that process and build a collaborative team around all the users of this software. And, you know, that's kind of a pretty exciting direction. And I think, in general, where Collab.net is going is, you know, many of you may have heard of their first product line, which is something called Source Exchange, which is really, it's a service whereby companies who want a particular piece of open source software written can put out an RFP for it and people from the community can effectively bid on it, and then other people can do peer review and so on. So it's, again, trying to sort of formalize the processes of open source so that we, as a culture, we learn how to apply those things. So, it really can help drive open source into various kinds of vertical markets and get a lot of the benefits of that collaborative computing to other people. A lot of large companies are very excited because whether or not, you know, they want to play the open source game in the outside world, you know, I mean, you know, there's still a lot of fear and uncertainty about, you know, how it will play if you free your software crown jewels. They want to take the benefits of the open source process, internally. I mean, there's more developers in many a corporation than there is in even the largest open source projects. You know, so a company like Boeing, for example, might say, oh yeah, we've got a huge team. We want to use those tools for distributed collaboration. And I think that's a very exciting direction for open source, is to think through what is it about our processes that we want to propagate. Because ultimately I think of open source as a culture. It's not just a kind of software. You know, and again, you know, a lot of what I've continually try to do is to get this culture to be more inclusive, to recognize the kinds of things that are similar if you start putting on this collaborative hat. You know, for example, a lot of people don't think of the IETF, the Internet Engineering Task Force, as an open source project. And in one sense, it isn't. It doesn't produce free software that gets bundled into Linux, except in some cases it produces standards. You know, but the process by which it produces those standards is remarkably similar to an open source project. I mean, again, I don't know how many of you know about the IETF, but, you know, it's a truly remarkable cultural institution. I sometimes like to say to people, I think the IETF is one of the crown jewels of Western civilization. I mean, it's an astonishing thing. Here it is. It's a standards body in which anybody can show up. I mean, anyone, you guys could all show up at the next IETF meeting and go to the working groups and vote. Now, you probably wouldn't be listened to because you wouldn't know what the hell you were talking about. But, you know, it's that same meritocracy that would allow any of you to send in a patch to Linux. You know, it's the idea that, you know, there's a great line from Dave Clark, who's a professor at MIT, which was sort of the unofficial motto of the IETF. You know, no kings, no presidents, just a rough consensus and running code. You know, they're just kind of looking for, you know, get it to work. People get in there and contribute on a peer-to-peer level. It's really about peer-to-peer decision-making. It's about peer-to-peer, collaborative process. And the IETF has, I think, great lessons to teach the open source community. And again, it's kind of interesting. A lot of the net-facing open source projects are very aware of the IETF process because, for example, you know, SendMail is based on IETF standards, and Eric Allman has been a participant in the IETF, you know, for the past 20 years. Similarly, Brian Behlendorf, Apache, you know, is built around some of those open standards that are part of that web process. So my, you know, urging again to the Linux community is to think about the net, to think about the lessons of the net. And those lessons may be in this cultural vein, as in what are the processes of open source and how do we instantiate them in ways that make them more useful for not just for corporate America, but really for everybody, so that we can continue this really exciting new world. We are building a new world. And my worry is that just when it's starting to come together, we start saying, just kidding, let's go back to the old way of doing things. You know, and that's what you see happen again and again. You have this wave of innovation. Bring in, focus on the culture of collaboration. Figure out the tools of collaboration. Secondly, think about the way the web is transforming the future of applications. Think about the ways that applications themselves are about collaboration between computers. You know, and that, I guess, kind of brings, you know, just a last sort of future-looking thread of things that I'd love to see the open source community owning. Interesting projects like SETI at Home. How many people here know about SETI at Home? Okay, a lot of you. That's great. It's high awareness. Well, it's this very cool project where, you know, they don't have enough computer power, you know, to process all the radio telescope signals looking for signs of extraterrestrial intelligence, right? So they said, hey, let's put together, you know, a volunteer organization of people who will download our screensaver, and, you know, it'll run as a screensaver on their PCs or Macs or Linux machines, and use up their spare processor cycles analyzing this data, and it'll send it back. So here's this massive collaborative, really, it's kind of like a sort of a delayed supercomputer, you know, in some sense, where, you know, we have things, those of you who haven't seen it, we have a little new publication called the Journal of Linux Technology, which is focused on clustering in this issue. You can find a copy in our booth or in VA's if you want one. But it talks about supercomputer applications on Linux. But here's something that's even, you know, a bigger than a supercomputer. I mean, some people are referring to it as the computing grid, in the same way we have a power grid, you know, where you're basically getting cooperating computers working on big problems. You know, so they've got a million people whose PCs are individually cranking away on little data sets that take them, you know, 20 or 30 hours each, and then they send them back in to be collated. I think that's kind of a really cool future of computing. This, obviously, these same kind of techniques have been used for some of the cryptographic challenges. I think there's going to be a lot of interesting problems that are going to come from a world in which our computers routinely collaborate. And I think that's related to the little piece I read from John Udell, this whole idea of what are the APIs for collaborative computing going to look like? What are the APIs for this future, seamless web going to look like? They're going to look very different than the APIs for Win32 or the APIs for GTK. They really have a lot more to do with data transport. You know, so there's things like Dave Weiner's XML RPC, which is basically a way of doing a remote procedure call to a remote computer and getting back some XML. And I go, okay, that's sort of wave of the future kind of stuff that I'd like to see the Linux community focused on. So we have an exciting future ahead of us. There's a lot to build. The world of computing 5 years from now is going to look radically different than the world today. I'd like Linux to be a huge part of it. And so, you know, get out there, think about how the web impacts what you're doing, and have fun.